Hi, and welcome to the Frihof Institute of Progressive Halakha. I'm Rabbi Mark Wyshovsky, and this is the 12-minute shiur number 13, Coercion and Consent. As always, you can find the source sheet for this episode at our website, frihofinstitute.org/learning. Just scroll down to the 12-minute shiur. Do we human beings possess free will? It's a serious problem for thinkers in various fields. Philosophers debate whether our actions are the product of our own free decisions or whether they're determined by forces beyond our conscious control. Theologians wonder how the notion of free will is compatible with the idea of an omniscient God who knows in advance just what choices we're going to make. Legal theorists presume, at any rate, that we have free will. Otherwise, how could we ever enter into binding and legally enforceable obligations that by definition require our consent, our freely given agreement? And yet in law, too, there is the possibility that one's consent might be the product of forces that operate upon us and in effect coerce us to consent. In this and the following episodes, we're going to explore how the halakha deals with this problem of coercion and consent. We need to start with two fundamental halachic concepts that you'll find on lines 8 through 11 on the source sheet. The first is gemirat da'at, which means consent, informed, freely made agreement. The word da'at connotes mental capacity. And the root gimel mem resh gamar conveys the sense of decision. In full mental capacity, one has arrived at a decision, a freely arrived at intention, that is, consent, to do a certain thing. That's gemirat da'at. The second concept, ones rachmana petareh, expresses the idea that one is not held responsible or culpable for actions that one commits by way of force or coercion. That is, without one's informed consent or gemirat da'at. It follows that any transaction or agreement that you're forced or coerced to make is for that very reason invalid, null, and void. Except there's a huge and puzzling exception to this rule. Let's look at the sugya in Bava Batra 47b and 48a, beginning on lines 16 through 19. Amar Rav Huna, Taliyuhu v'zabin, zvine zvine. Rav Huna said, one who sells under duress, now the text literally says, if they hang him up, suspend him, from what? I don't know, from a tree, a roof, top of a wall, whatever. And while up there he agrees to sell so that you let him down, his sale is valid. Now, the Talmud asks, my Tama, which is a really good question. Isn't this a case of ones? Shouldn't the sale be regarded as invalid? How could Rav Huna say such a thing? The Talmud has to explain his reasoning, so it says, Kol demazbin inesh, whenever a person sells property, he does so under coercion. He is anis. Because were he not forced to sell, he wouldn't sell, yet even so his sale is valid. To explain this, let's turn to Rashbam, the grandson of Rashi, who writes the standard commentary to the printed tractate Bava Batra. We'll find that in lines 26 and 31. It seems that Rashi himself never completed his own perush, so the Gemara uses Rashbam's instead. Rashbam writes, in most cases, a person sells his property because he's coerced, he is anis to do so. If he didn't need the money, he wouldn't sell. Yet, afilu hachi, hava zivine zivine ba'al korcho, even so, his sale is valid even without his consent, because the Torah makes no distinction between property one sells even though one needs it, and property one sells because one doesn't need it. For example, a farmer selling his produce and a merchant selling her wares don't need those goods. They want to sell them for cash. That's the whole point. In Rav Huna's case, the seller apparently does not want to sell, but in that case, in all cases, the buyer acquires title. Thus, here too, in the case of Rav Huna, even though the seller was coerced, the buyer acquires title, since the seller received fair market value, damim, even though he did not consent to the sale. In other words, all acts of sale involve some element of coercion. So we have to conclude with Rav Huna that coercion per se does not invalidate a sale. Notice we say sale. As Rashbam tells us, the seller has been fairly compensated for his property. Otherwise, if he simply gave his property to the buyer under coercion, that would be a case of robbery and obviously an invalid transaction. But the Talmud does not accept this justification for Rav Huna's puzzling statement. Look at lines 41 and 42. V'dilma shane unsa denafshe m'unsa de'acharine. Perhaps coercion that one feels on one's own is different than coercion exerted by others. As Rashbam explains in lines 45 through 50, one who sells because they need the money does so mida'ato, willingly, and for that reason, we can say that gemaru makne, one has consented to the sale. But when the coercion comes from others, well, how can that be a case of gemirat da'at? So we need to find a better rationale for Rav Huna's halacha. The Talmud suggests a baraita beginning on line 53. It consists of a midrash that determines the rule in cases where one has vowed to bring a sacrifice to the temple and has not fulfilled that vow. The midrash is based upon Leviticus chapter 1, verse 3. Im ola korbano min habakar zachar tamim yakrivenu el petach ohel moed yakrivoto lirtzono lifnei Adonai. If one's burnt offering is of cattle, one shall offer it, yakrivenu, an unblemished male, at the entrance of the tent of meeting. One shall offer it, yakrivoto, so that it be acceptable, lirtzono, before Adonai. Now notice, the verse uses two expressions, highlighted in red, for the same instruction. One shall offer it. This allows the rabbis to say that the second of those expressions is superfluous. We already know one shall offer it, so that second expression must come for another purpose. Now the baraita. Yakrivoto, one shall offer it. This teaches that one is coerced to fulfill his vow. Yachol ba'al korcho, does this mean even against his will? No, because Talmud lomar lirtzono, the verse says lirtzono, which implies that one must offer the sacrifice willingly for it to be acceptable. Ha ketzad, well, isn't this a contradiction? How can one be coerced to do something willingly? And the answer is, kofin oto ad sheyomar rotzeh ani. One is coerced to the point that he says, I do this willingly. Thus, one's valid consent can be elicited through coercion. As Rashbam explains in lines 70 through 72, this idea supports Rav Huna's contention that the seller can consent to a sale of property even when the seller's agreement, rotzeh ani, is it obtained through coercive means. But here, too, the Talmud objects, lines 74 through 76. V'dilma shane hatam, denichale de tehevele kapara. Perhaps that case, in other words, bringing the sacrifice, is different because there he accepts the need for atonement. That is, you may be coerced to fulfill your vow because despite the fact you're being coerced, we presume that you really want, you rotzeh, to do the right thing, to keep your word and thereby avoid committing a sin. As Rashbam tells us, even when you bring the sacrifice under coercion, you do so with a lev shalem, with full sincerity. That's lines 78 through 81. Obviously, none of this applies to Rav Huna's halacha, for there the seller fulfills no mitzvah or religious obligation when he agrees to sell under coercion. So the Talmud has to search for another proof to support Rav Huna, and it finds one this time from the end of that same baraita. And it's on lines 83 through 87. Ve'ela miseifa, the same holds true for the issuing of gittin, divorce documents. The husband is coerced to the point that he says, rotzeh ani, I issue this divorce willingly. Now, in our next installment, we'll focus more closely on this issue of kafiat get, the coercion of divorce. For now, it's enough to say that according to Torah law, in order for a divorce to be valid, a husband must issue it of his own full consent. But here we see that his consent may be coerced out of him. So, does this legal fact offer support to Rav Huna, who says that a coerced sale is nonetheless a valid sale? The Talmud's answer, once again, is no. Lines 89 through 91, V'dilma shane hatam. Perhaps that case of divorce is different because it's a mitzvah lishma divrei chachamim. It's a mitzvah to heed the instruction of the sages. That is, like one who made a vow, we presume that the husband really wants to do the right thing and heed the order, the command of the Beit Din, so that when the court uses coercion to get him to do so, he really does mean rotze ani. And once again, this reasoning does not apply to Rav Huna's case, because the individual up in that tree is under no religious or legal obligation to sell his or her property. The Talmud therefore concludes, and this is in lines 93 through 96, that the rationale for Rav Huna's rule is to be found in a svara, a logical inference, a matter of reason or common sense. Agav unse gamaru makne, as a result of the coercion, one reaches a reasonable, consensual decision to sell. As Rashbam explains, lines 99 through 103, it makes perfect sense to agree to the sale so that you can escape the yisurin, the pain of the coercion. It's unpleasant up there in the tree. It's the only way they'll take you down from the tree or the roof or the wall. And of course, you receive fair market value for the property, so you lose nothing in the transaction. That's why it's consensual. And this, by the way, is the accepted halakha, as we see from the passage in Rambam beginning on line 108. It turns out, then, that in the halakha, coercion is not incompatible with consent. But really, how can I be coerced into doing something of my own free will and consent? It seems like a contradiction in terms. Perhaps the halakha wants to chart a middle course between free will and determinism. We do have the power to give and to withhold consent. We have to. Our legal world depends upon our ability to arrive at free will decisions. Our moral world depends upon our capacity to make decisions for which we can be held responsible. But we have to recognize that we exercise the power to choose to make decisions always within the constraints exerted upon us by forces beyond our control. We often must choose between bad alternatives, but our choice nonetheless remains our choice, exercised under our power of consent, and we are therefore held responsible for that choice, even though we were coerced into making it. Now, while this may be a hard-headed, realistic appraisal of the world we live in, it does raise some obvious ethical problems. The halakha confronts those problems, and that will be the subject of the upcoming episodes of our podcast. In the meantime, though, this has been the 12-Minute Shiur number 13 from the Frihof Institute of Progressive Halakha. Lehitraot.